We're going to have to go to deliver introductions and to a great extent, because we're going to get into a topic here. We've got an hour and a half to cover this topic. I just want to point out that one of the main reasons we had this topic get on the agenda here to have the scholarships here is because the NCB Quality Assurance Program is moving towards developing a transportation educational training component to add to our next QA or Quality Assurance Program, and this will be rolled out this summer. We'll talk a little bit more about it. But as we move into cattle handling and transportation, we find out there's a considerable amount of interest in some type of a module for training and making people, both the producer and the people transporting cattle, a little more aware of some of the things that we can maybe do a little better job of. So at this time, I'm going to introduce Christina Jablowski. She said I'd probably kill her name because I didn't pronounce it very well. She's with Pfizer Animal Health. She's going to, Pfizer sponsors this for the 10 plus years. And she's going to give an introduction and move right into the program. Tim O'Brien will give about a 45-minute presentation. We have Joe King then. We'll wrap this session up, and we'll have plenty of time for questions and answers. So do feel free to ask our speakers questions or comments that you have. So Christina, we're ready to start.
Good morning. First, I would like to welcome you to the 2005 Academy College. Again, my name is Christina Jablowski. I serve as the Marketing Communications Associate for all the bios, recruit, and website brands at Pfizer in New York City. We would like to thank you for participating in what Pfizer promises to be a great learning opportunity. The NCBA has enjoyed a long-standing partnership with Pfizer Animal Health, the sole sponsor of the popular Cattlemen's College for the past 12 years. It is a pleasure to partner with NCBA on this educational effort that helps producers and ultimately help the damper industry. I'd like to introduce Tim O'Brien, who has spent 15 years cowboying on some of North America's largest commercial cattle ranches and feed yards. In 1994, he started his consulting business near Calgary, Alberta. He has spent most of the last 10 years focusing on agricultural law, transportation issues, and animal welfare. He's split his time between consulting and freelance writing for Western Horseman Magazine. At this time, I'd like to introduce Tim O'Brien.
Thanks, Christina. Thanks, Pfizer. Thanks, guys and gals, for coming and spending a little bit of your morning with us. I sure appreciate it. This topic, cattle transportation, is one that I kind of stumbled upon about 8-9 years ago, just getting into my consulting thing. I started really doing more work with feed yard training and whatnot, animal welfare issues and stuff, and somebody said, you know, we should take a look at the loadout end of these feed yards. So we started peeling the layers back. And I'm really quite amazed with how complex the whole cattle transportation issue is, so we'll kind of get into it a little bit here. Of course, our industry is totally dependent on road transportation of live cattle. It's not like the good old days where you just run up the railhead. Dr. Janice Swanson at KSU was very, and Dr. Mark Spier as well, very involved in the cattle transportation end of it. And she said, the university can accept that transportation is probably the single greatest stressor in an animal's life. And I probably tend to agree with that, although branding ranks right up there too. Just tracking that average 1,250-pound critter, move one on farm pasture pasture lot. I'll probably do that myself. Just go gather out sticks and pears and, you know, split the calves off and take them up in the gooseneck up the mountain, spend all day doing that and be late for supper and get a go back. Move two, we're going to wean off later in the year, and we'll get some commercial truckers to help us out with that. Maybe the neighbors steal a kid out of college or something like that. And move three, after a day or two at the auction market, we're going to go to the feed yard with these calves. And move four of the, you know, out of the feed yard packer. So there's four moves on four different units and contact with roughly 15 different people. I got it the first one myself. We had 3 people on the second move, 4 people on the third move, and about 7 on the final move right up to so forth. So that's a lot of different people, a lot of different ways to handle these critters, and you know, this animal has to go through that and endure that. Transport unit classifications, we're talking about commercial tandem driving units, non-commercial tandem drives, commercial small goosenecks, and non-commercial goosenecks. And commercial transport unit we're defining as commercially registered and insured aluminum trailer or bonded dump truck, tandem or drive, single or multi-deck, punch side or flat side, and a non-commercial, you know, just average reason that unit just looks like this here, just for short hauls and trips around the ranch and whatnot. So we slaughter 37.5 million head annually, and we put 38 on our commercial truck, 47,000 pounds or whatever. That's about 939,000 commercial loads a year, or 3,350 a day on 280 kill days. That's just the commercially slaughtered critters alone. This does not include ranch to pasture movement, ranch to auction market to feed yard, and farm to farm. So there's another 5% state expected slaughter too than that. So I'm saying, and don't hold me to this, and I dare anybody go there and count these loads today, because you probably won't get it done. 7,000 semi loads, 2,000 to 4,000 gooseneck loads, and who the heck knows how many ocean going, and there's a lot of purebred cattle going on aircraft too, a lot of aircraft movement. There's a lot of cattle being moved around every day out there. The hands-on players we're talking about, of course, the cattle producer, and I'll start there. The truck's got a role, the feed yard and auction market handlers have a role, and the packing plant receivers and the handlers movement for the kill floor, they all have a role in this. They're the hands-on people. And the infrastructure people are industry associations, such as us and what we're doing, marketing, so the buyers and feed yard and auction market and packing plants, commodity people, transport companies, guided drive, dispatch, insurance, that's vehicle and cargo insurance. Equipment manufacturers, they're very, very up on trying to keep the engineering portion of this alive and up to date. Maintenance, washout facilities, mechanical. Regulatory bodies, we got state or federal regulatory bodies that may or may not be well versed in live animal transportation on a commercial level. Special interest groups, we've got animal interest groups like animal welfare, animal rights, that sort of thing. Political, we've got security-based interest groups there as well. And the media also plays a part in this. And finally, the consumer. A very important consumer. I like to think of this as a relocation process. It's not, I know when I was working the big feed yards and the big outfits, it was really easy for us to just, you know, cut out the critters, 20 loads or whatever it was, throw them on the truck, wave bye bye, you know, and hope the heck they got there. Just as long as they get off the yard or get off the premises around the bend, you know, we really didn't think much about it. And again, as I go back to, you know, feeling like, you know, I as a feed yard foreman, I ran one of the big feed yards up in Alberta, 25,000 head yard of a 90,000 head operation. We shipped a lot of cattle on a daily basis, and it was really easy for us to just look at them as just another commodity, just another number, just load them and go. And we weren't thinking of this whole thing as being a relocation process, and everybody's kind of involved in it. And, you know, now in retrospect, I look back and I think there's so many things that I could have done as a feedyard manager to set ourselves up for a much better carcass, like reduction carcass value evaluation. We just absolutely weren't doing a good enough job on that. I like to think of it as there's three stages to this process. Number one being grouping, number two being the actual move, and number three being resettlement or termination. Like stage one being grouping is when, you know, the boys actually go in there and start gathering up these cattle. And they are out there in a stable social environment. They got their pecking order. Everything's fine. And we go in there, whether we're on foot, on ATVs, or helicopters, or horseback, it doesn't matter. We're going in there, we're going to mess that all up. And we bring them up to shipping and start doing the sort out. So, stage two being the transport process, the shipper tenders the cattle, and so there's the sort and the way out, whatever we need to do there. The trucker comes in and he assesses and accepts the load that we tendered. So that's where the mesh is right there. And once the trucker takes that load and says, yeah, it's good to go and load out, then you basically got the ball. Now, the stage two, the transport process, also includes layover to auction market and then picking up the second, like when the second person in picks up the load and takes it to the final destination where it can, where the critter can resettle, and like say at the feed yard where they're allowed to resettle and resume another a stable social environment. So, or in the case of the packing plant where they at least kill for, there's a lot of time spent in resettlement and layerage and stuff like that. In the case of feed yard guests, they're coming in at 2 o'clock in the morning. Processors arrive at 7, 8 o'clock in the morning. They start running through, and they're not ready to have a pen, sent to home pen till 4 o'clock in the afternoon. So when those critters are homed at 4 in the afternoon on that day, it might be another 3 days, maybe 2-3 days before those critters are especially on freshly calved, before they're settled, before they find the feed bunk, the water tank, before they get the pecking order figured out. And that's, there's a lot of things that can happen in those three stages that we're talking about cattle transportation. And, when I think back to me, it was all the trucker. It was all the transport stage. It was all what happened on the truck. And I tell you, there's a heck of a lot of meat. We all know that there's a heck of a lot that can happen in these three stages. We need to find out who's responsible for what. Assignment of responsibilities. The shipper, trucker, and the receiver need to be aware of the requirements of the job, and that takes an acute awareness of what direction the industry is going and what the needs of the industry are. And this is why we're here today, to get that message out. They must consider the needs of the animals and be aware of the industry guidelines and related law. That's kind of the way we're going these days, too. We have to have a due diligence component in everything we do. We have to watch out for what we do. The shipper, for example, is responsible to tender only cattle that are fit for transport and for slaughter that are acceptable for human consumption. So something like this, an advanced AIP, would not be suitable to go to slaughter. There's a pretty good chance this critter wouldn't make it. In fact, I know when I took this picture, about an hour later, that critter was dead. But an hour earlier, that critter would have slipped on a load. Easy. He just had a little bit of dirt around his lips, and his ears weren't down like that. So, everybody that's had anything to do with AIP, atypical interstitial pneumonia, knows that it's a very quick advancing disease. And so, things like that can happen on board. The trucker assesses and accepts the cattle tendered by the shipper. So when he closes the tailgate, he's taking responsibility for that load. And a lot of the guys are saying, we have to be veterinarians. Is that what it is? Well, actually, yeah, you do need to have a basic to advanced level of knowledge of animal health. Yeah, you do. You actually do. And that's just the way it is. And you need to have an awareness of accepted industry guidelines. And that includes something like this, something simple like this. Title 9, Chapter 3 of the Code of Federal Regulations 213 commands slaughter of livestock act. There are many things in that act, such as here, that are pertinent to transporting livestock. I think C is an interesting one. Any swine, blah, 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 and cattle, sheep, goats, horses, mules, any other equine having a temperature of 105 degrees Fahrenheit or higher shall be identified in the U.S. condemned. And anybody knows, you know, a lot of you guys know out there were shipping foot rods, you know, that are temping up there pretty high. And I thought that was kind of interesting. So are cattle truckers equipped to do this job out there? Like, do they know what we really expect of them in this ever-changing industry? Are they aware of the negative consequences resulting from poor choices? And I'm not saying they're poor choices, but poor choices that they're asked to make or maybe constantly coerced to make. Have we as an industry given them the tools to perform the job correctly? I'd say primarily they do know what we expect of them. Some are and some aren't aware of the negative consequences of their choices and the choices that are put upon them. And have we as industry given them the tools to perform the job correctly? No, I don't think we really have. I really do feel in my heart that we've not addressed this sector of the industry as well as we should have. And I think it's because it's such a subjective sector. It's just a link in the chain. It's a link in the sense. It's not really tangible. It's just a truck that comes and a truck that goes. And I think now the time for us to really start taking a hard look at this thing. Who is the cattle trucker anyway? Well, to start with, they're a professionally trained driver. So they've got to go through all the driving stuff that any CDL commercial driver has to go through. They're responsible. I'm being pretty conservative there. It's probably more like $200,000 worth of equipment and, you know, $50,000-$60,000 worth of cargo. Independent hard worker, away from home a lot. That's very hard on people. Likes the job, likes the livestock, and really, really likes the people. That's the one thing I get when I talk to these guys and say, you know, what keeps in them? Why can't you not haul potato chips or ping pong balls or something that's even light and easy? Because they like the people. They really do. They like the industry and they like hanging out at the auction market and maybe not until 2 o'clock in the morning, mind you, but they like it. They're an integral part of our production system. A cattle trucker skills profile, well, they need to pre-tip the truck and trailer, so that's a whole other can of worms there. They need to have an acute knowledge of client relations. And Dallas, you're going to talk about that, I'm sure, because there's no way you could even teach that, could you? That's a hammer blow by hammer blow kind of a thing, I think. Loadout, trip, and delivery responsibilities. So we're dealing with perishable cargo on and off the road in places that some guys, I mean, you wouldn't ask the Jeep to go. They're working at night in extreme weather and they're getting pushed like crazy during fall runs. So these are the kind of things that the guy has to put up with on a good day. Then he's got to have cattle handling skills. Again, when you're packing potato chips into a truck, I mean, there's only so many ways you can do that. And potato chips are not going to kick you in the shins and stomp on you. And with cattle handling, there's so many different variables there. There are easy cattle to load. There are rank cattle to load. There are cattle that have never, ever seen a man afoot before. They've been running in a feed yard all their life, come off a cow outfit where they had to sort the moose and the grizzly bears off and load the trucks of horseback, and then the first person afoot that critter sees is the trucker. And very difficult to work that way. Then they've got post-dirt responsibilities, and I'm talking about paperwork and clean out, making sure everything's copacetic. And the pre-trip, they got the camera size of the truck and trailer, and that's kind of a big thing. You know, these trailers get banged around and made of aluminum. There's always something fixed back there. Prep the trip, we got the fuel, we got to choose a route, especially during breakup when there's road band and whatnot. Weather awareness, delays, emergency kit to have on board, communications. You can never lose communication with that dispatcher. Heaven knows what would happen to you if you didn't know where you were. Client relations. The driver is the representative of the transport sector. He's the representative of the company. He's the one that's going to face the client and work with them, probably. Maybe, you know, for up to an hour or whatever, you know, on some outfits when they're not really quite prepared, and maybe, you know, have to do a little bit of a sort or whatever. So a lot of times these drivers are out there actually working with the client, and they have to learn how to do that and do it properly. They have to understand what the client expects of them and how to give the client what he wants. They have to know how to effectively deal with a client that isn't going to get what he wants. And they have to know where to draw the line with the client as well. And I won't get into those issues later. Dale will talk about all that stuff. Responsibilities of the trucker. Time to arrive at the loadout facility with a clean, serviceable rig. Handle the cattle according to industry or the client standards. Client might have a little higher standard than the status quo. Some clients make special requests like no prods, whatever, stay in the truck, read a book, we'll bang on the door when you're loaded, that kind of thing. Drive in a manner that reflects concern for live animals on board. It's a totally different deal. It's a moving, shifting load. They need to take responsibility for delivering a clean, calm, healthy load cab. That's the goal here. And file the paperwork in the right box. And they need to represent the beef industry in a positive manner when they're out on the road or in the public eye. So for identifying some key issues that many, many hours of talking to actual drivers, dispatchers, company owners, and getting some feedback and some interesting emails. This is what the truckers are saying to us, representing industry. They're saying, you know, that they got their chance to say something to us, and this is what they're saying. They're getting pressure to load high risk or unfit animals. Maybe at the auction market, maybe at the farm, maybe on the dairy farm. Might be a spent milk cow, or might be an old cull cow, or something like that. And this is something we hear quite a bit from the trucker. We hear, I asked, well, why did you put that critter on board? Because they told me if I didn't take it, he was going to call Jones Trucking, and they were going to take it, and I was never going to set foot in the yard again. I've heard that more times than I've had hot meals. And, I mean, I don't know what to do about it, but we're going to identify it anyway and think about it. Clean out options. We're running out of truck washes, there you see the bottom, that are accepting biomaterial, bedding and whatnot. And that's got to be very difficult for these guys on the road. They're trying to keep a clean rig. The new hours of service for the long haul guys are difficult to live with, we're hearing. Not enough packing plant receiving facility. In other words, the waiting to offload at some of these plants is a little bit too long, and then your cattle sitting on the trucks for plus an hour. Different weight restrictions for state, especially east-west trips. Oh, more truck concerns. These guys just wouldn't stop talking. Scale infractions. So if the client overloads the truck, say on pasture, they'll overload the truck deliberately, which apparently this happens from time to time. even if the client takes the total weight, the driver takes the hit on the when it goes against his license on that. So something needs to look at. Industry-wide loading density standards are unclear, and we have a few recommended loading density standards out there. Different groups, insurance groups, meat industry groups, and they're not really straight across the board. So I might want to be looked at. A piece of the livestock insurance sector. Problems with vehicle insurance parity. In other words, the cattle trucker. What do you guys say? If you were on freight, what would your insurance rates be? Considerably less, 50% less, 30% less, for whatever reason. Dwindling qualified driver pool. We're looking at probably the same thing we're looking at in the deep industry, where we just can't quite seem to get the people to come in and replace what we got going out. And I mean, there are some amazing drivers and cattle handlers that are coming into retirement age right now, and to try to find qualified replacements for that dwindling pool is turning out to be very, very challenging. There are actually many calls for training and certification, and we talked about this briefly at the beginning. The National Pork Board has a Trucker Quality Assurance Program, and they do have a certification for all the drivers that are hauling into their plants. It's an in-house certification. We've got to be very careful when we're talking certification. There's certification by a third party that audits and can keep the certification alive, and then there's in-house certification. And their TQA is the in-house certification. And in other words, all it really means is that they're certified that they have taken the course and they've achieved a certain grade on the test or whatever. So, but an actual certification might be, like a third-party certification might be very difficult to impose. Industry concerns, we got consumer and public perception of production methods. They're always looking at us, and we got interest groups looking at us and, you know, shining the spotlight on us and asking us questions. Food safety is a big one. Carcass evaluation. Economics of production, like if this is going to pay or not. And animal ethics groups. These the animal rights groups that are really trying to enforce things upon us. Biosecurity is another big one. Bioterrorism is one that's emerging as well. Packers have some concerns. They want to know if there's a standard op for loading and unloading. Industry standard op. What do we do with cold and wet cattle that come in? Hours of service delays. You know, if we've got a plant that's 15 hours away and the guy's driving for 10 or whatever it is and can't make it, you know, these cattle are on board for, I guess, another 8, maybe they don't. Economic accountability throughout the relocation process. In other words, they want accountability going back further back down the chain. Auction market is concerned about drop-off and handling of unfit animals. You see that a lot. Like I say, you know, talk about some of the spent dairy cows getting dropped off at the auction market. Animals that should have never left the farm. So now we got downers, we got changes in our U.S. downer policy. But we need to examine what contributes to a downer en route and how this problem can be avoided. So again, it goes back to assessing, tankering only animals that are fit for transport. And there are critters, you know, we know, and all of us that have any experience in this business, moving these cattle around, you can pretty much tell a critter that's not going to go on and make the trip. And there's no sense even putting those critters on there anymore. And we need to pass this information along to our shipper and transporter network. Biosecurity is another big one. What do we do in the case of foreign animal disease? An example being, of course, foot and mouth. Something highly transmissible, something that might even be airborne. Truckers play a role in control of this, and we're looking at that on a nationwide level. There's even talk of a ceased movement in case of a breach. So if we have some foreign animal disease show up in a certain area, there may be a possibility that we could call a ceased movement and really shut down the risk of creating a larger at-risk area if we could do this. So these are all things that animal health commissions and other interest groups are looking at. The trucker definitely plays a role in that. Again, with the cleanup, we're talking $65 to $80 now to do a vetted vehicle. And you know, there's a lot of handling of that waste. There's a big economic burden on the truck wash to handle that waste. And then now, especially with biosecurity, who really knows what's in that load of waste? Bioterrorism. This comes from Mike Gallagher's domestic terrorism operation unit of the FBI. We sat in on a spiel he gave last year. And the FBI considers animal rights and ecoterrorism to be the number one form of domestic terrorism. And the FBI considers SHAC, the group SHAC, Stop Huntington Animal Cruelty, to be the number one domestic terrorist concern. And I have a printout with me on SHAC if anybody wants to read it after this session. This is the one pager. It was released 2 days ago on their latest movements. And PETA, as everybody knows who PETA is quite public and vocal about their wish to see foot-and-mouth disease come to North America, and they have been tied to SHAC. Okay. Now, again, this all came from Mike Gallagher, FBI. They're very up on domestic terrorism and the animal advocate implications, so I think that was fairly comforting to know that they were up on that. I was wondering how that was all working out, especially after the Homeland Security bill. I'm very happy to see that they are aware of what's going on and they're treating it very, very seriously. FBI considered livestock transport units to be a soft target, meaning they are out there on the road, they're single units handled by a single person, day and night. They can be stopped anywhere, they can be accessed easily, and so you can see that they are taking this quite seriously. If they're calling them a soft target. Now, I'll be attending a session in Arkansas in March. It's a learn, I think it's a 3-day course where we're going to learn a little bit more about this stuff, and I'm going to try to, because these guys aren't really too up on the cattle transportation end of this, so I'm going to try to infuse a little of our perspective into that session. So we'll see what happens there. But at least we know that they're definitely taking it seriously. Animal rights. We need to know about a group named Animals Angels. You can check them out online. Just punch in Animals Angels. If you got a little comment thingy, you're a journalist. What's that thing? Alright. The thought is that for the S there. I didn't spell that wrong. I don't know why they did that, but that's the way it is. Check them out online. They're kind of an interesting group. They are not, I wouldn't consider them to be extremist, but their mission, and it's printed right on their website, is to abolish long distance transport of livestock in North America. They have been extremely effective in the EU, and they are hell bent on coming on over and doing whatever they can to impose EU idealisms on us And that's fine. I mean, I want everybody to understand. I mean, this is free world, free country. And I mean, I got no problem against animal rights people or any of that. And you're free to voice your own opinion, and you know, I welcome that. However, the animal rights extremists, the ones that break the law and are willing to put human life and animals in jeopardy for their own cause, of course, you know, we can't have any of that. I don't think animals, because they've never presented themselves to be that way at all. They simply have a mandate to abolish the long distance transport. They would love to see it if there was a packing plant within 10 miles of every farm, and they just want nice, you know, everything to be bedded down and nice halls and lots of room and that sort of thing. And then maybe that works fine in Europe, where you can go 8 hours and go to 9.5 countries, but you can't even get out of the state of Texas in 8 hours. And if they were to impose that here in North America, we have some significant economic burden. Now, what they went and did was, they fraudulently presented themselves. They came here last, like in 2003, August 2003, to Canada and to the United States, and they fraudulently presented themselves as a gal and her videographer, and they showed up and started following our trucks around, and they said that they were from the EU, and they were agriculture inspectors and all this kind of nonsense, and one line they used down here in Colorado was that they were university undergrad doing a thesis or something, and they just asked instructors if they could follow them around. And they got some really good video footage of what's going on. There's a snapshot. It was a load of pigs, a load of cow cows and bulls, and a load of horses going all different directions here, north and south, east and west. And the footage they got, and I have a copy of it on this thing right here if anybody wants to see it afterwards. It's very incriminating, damaging, and they produced it, along with a six-step blitz to the media, and they got a lot of mileage out of that. And anyway, they're back. They're here right now in North America and doing their thing again. So, thankfully, NCBA has a position here on livestock abuse. Therefore, be resolved that NCBA calls upon and urges the industry to follow commonly accepted livestock and business management practices in animal health and care. Be it further resolved that NCBA shall not be compelled to defend anyone in the beef cattle industry who has clearly acted to abuse livestock. Be it further resolved that NCBA may determine that the best interest of the industry is served by supporting action from appropriate state or federal agencies against those who do abuse livestock. So this is something tangible that we can hold up against any blatant attack on what we're doing, and we can say, well, we do have a policy here. We do have a policy. Of course, they're going to come back and say, well, it ain't working, and we're going to say, well, we're working on it. And that's a lot better than not having anything at all. And we do have statutes. Every state has an animal abuse, cruelty to animal statute that puts something like this. And, interesting, this one's right at the front here in Oklahoma. Any person shall willfully or maliciously overdrive, overload, blah, blah, blah. It's got stuff on, most of these sections have stuff on transportation specifically, which is interesting. Okay, the world stage. The EU Commission welcomes the Council's agreement on stricter welfare rules for transport of animals. So you can follow this. We're tracking the EU, the European Commission, states that this is what we're looking at, stricter rules for journeys of more than 8 hours. You can't see where animal rages was coming from when this is what's happening over there. And they're very, very successful over there with this. Training drivers, obligation to hold a certificate, and compulsory use of GPS to track vehicles. I hope my wife doesn't see that one, because she's probably one for that one. The World Veterinary Association also has a live animal transportation policy draft, and I have a copy of that here as well in case somebody wants to see that and see what they're up to there. Okay, identifying reproduction practices for trucking cattle. Our goals here, when we identify GPPs and apply them in the field, are to improve flow. This is like a plumber. Just got to improve the flow. You need backups and whatnot. You got to get that out of there, and everything will work good. Reduce carcass quality problems. And again, NCDA and the B2A program has a section on that. To provide transportation, avoid undue stress caused by overcrowding, excess time in transit, or improper handling during loading and unloading, which is very comprehensive. So it's a good way to put that. And here's a whole list of the things that NCDA talks about on the transport end of it, and I have copies of this as well. And very, very comprehensive. Excellent stuff. So if you want a copy of this, give me a shout out after the deal and I'll see if I can find it. If not, Gary will run right over to Copy Express and get 1,000 copies. So in improving the flow, we need to start thinking about handling these cattle according to industry accepted standards and guidelines and whatnot. Again, NCBA has a B2A thing all over that. KSU did a really interesting study last year, excellent study, and hats off to KSU. And they asked truckers and drivers, and they said, well, what's the most common type of handling problem that you encounter out there? Poor facilities, 71%. That's a big one. Poor lighting in the facility, 68%. Too little help, 41%. Inexperienced help, 28%. Dogs, oh my goodness, 18%. And too much help, 17%. I thought it was actually interesting. Cattle handling basics. Is it a natural ability or a learned behavior? I'm living proof that it is a learned behavior. I'm not a great hand. I'm an okay hand. I'm not a great horse guy. But I came from a city background. My dad was in the Air Force. We were posted all over the world. I never got kicked by a cow on my 15th birthday. I learned how to do it, but I learned from some really good guys too that wouldn't talk to us young guys. They just basically treated us like dirt and had to learn or just leave one or the other. You have to have a willingness to become better. A little bit of knowledge and some scientific based input doesn't hurt. And you learn by example. And I do mean both good and bad example. I learned a lot about what not to do by watching some guys. And you need to practice it, definitely. And soon enough, a good production practice will emerge. We're talking about the handler now. Everybody knows about the flight zone, but there's a zone around that handler, like ripples in a pool. And you can make that thing big, or you can make it real small. And when the trucker, and the receiver, and the shipper learn how to control that zone around themselves, that range of influence zone, that's when the fun of handling cattle really starts. So you can bounce the edge of that zone, just like two magnets. You can bounce the edge of that zone off the flight zone and critters, assuming they have one, and get into some really cool cattle handling field. But all the good handling needs not in your facilities or guards. Now, I didn't take this shot. This is up the IL range, and I didn't take this shot. Me and they got crappy facilities. They got, there's plywood nailed on it. But I'll tell you what, those boys loaded 900 calves in about 2 hours. And if you drove by or walked by, you didn't never know they were loading calves because you couldn't hear a word. Alright, electric projects. So here's the contentious issue, and we're going to hear some people that are going to say no prods, period. That's fine. I've thought about this, and coming from a large commercial production end, I can't get over two places where we would, just can't do without a prod. One of the running retreats at the feed yard, when they've been needled like four times, they're just not going in there. And the second place is loading out, especially on a super clean truck, trying to get the first critters on there. And, what we're trying to talk about here is just to get away from the canoe paddling, where they're prodding every critter. And, we're trying to teach you guys, don't prod a critter that's moving, and don't prod a critter that has no place to go, because that's, both of those are redundant. But I was here for this. I actually showed up to do an article on something, and I showed up to this place, and this guy was offloading this truck. He had about 85 head or whatever, 6, 7, 8 weights on there. And I'm telling you, I scored this guy. And he touched Only 29% of critters have caught in touch them. Cold contact. Zero contact, 70%. And hot contact, meaning when you zap them, maybe 1%. It's less than 1%. The vocalization on that output was negative, and the scrambling, and you guys know what I'm talking about, was negative. So I gave that guy an output rating of A+. However, in today's audit systems, he would have failed because he cold contacted 29% of those critters. He was just using that, the wand as an extension of his own hand. He's not going to stick his hand in there, or there'd be a team of OSHA specialists all over that guy. This you can quote me on. If you can hear a truck being loaded or offloaded before you see it, you probably got a problem. And you got to know what I'm talking about. When you drive on the yard or whatever, and you hear the bawling and the scrambling and whatnot, you got a facility problem or you got a handler problem. Or maybe you got a cat problem. Secrets of the best cattle handlers, they set the work up for success, right? And the analogy there is, if any of you guys ever watch the show Trucks, I mean, they got this shop, and they got the black and white tile on the floor, and they got the little gloves, and they, you know, and everything goes together real good. But I'm trying to do that exact same job in the snowbank in the dark with a pair of fancy cars and a big rock and a little rock, and that's my tool. It ain't gonna work. You gotta set yourself up for success. That's why those guys did those U-joints style and just slip and split. Maintain high visibility, low impact in among the cattle. High visibility, low impact, and cover yourself. Allow the lead critters a chance to establish flow, so relocation is considered a communication-based relationship. It's not a domination-based relationship, it's communication-based. You gotta ask them to do something, you gotta show them what you want them to do. Maintain flow, identify flow restrictions, and fix them. Forget everything you ever learned about handling cattle and horses from the movies, because that's got nothing to do with anything. Handler safety is critical. And a lot of this stuff is done at night. And it's amazing how these guys make it sometimes. Okay, positive progression. Where are we at now? What are we doing here? Reducing the incidence of a problem. Producers, that's us, beef and dairy. Must adopt a comprehensive conquest. In other words, get rid of these critters early before they go down the tube. Tender only physically healthy cattle for shipment. Sort for loading. When you trash the flooring in that unit, not a shadow of trash the flooring, but actual that works. Air ride trailers are, we don't really have the data on that, but a lot of people are saying air ride trailers for long hauls are really cut down on fatigue. Windshield protection for barn raised dairy cattle and rough. People are experimenting with that. I'm not 100% sure what they're doing there or how it's all working out for them, but anyway, it's something that guys are thinking about. Fat wagons, they're great and everything. They're only as good as the people operating them and the facilities utilize too. So improved handling methods are great there too. Hearing a lot of guys saying, I don't know, is anybody out there running fat wagons in this audience? Some guys are saying they're kind of a little bit dangerous to shut that top gate. So I don't know. Training for cattle truckers. We're all working on this NCBA beef quality assurance training initiative. And Jerry and Bill will talk a little bit about that. Future direction. This is again from Dr. Swanson and the late Dr. Tesh. The United States has fallen behind in the investigation of transportation of beef cattle and how such transport affects welfare. We risk accepting standards derived from research outside of the U.S. when regulatory oversight eventually becomes a reality for livestock transportation. In other words, exactly what she said, and this is 2001, is coming to pass as the EU looks upon us with disdain and they want to make some changes here. We need cohesion between everybody in the relocation process. That's the whole idea here, is to stimulate your thoughts and interests and try to get everybody together on this. Insurance sector, dairy, everybody. Everybody's got to get together on this. Our project list is to put together a report on cattle transportation in the United States, develop and maintain a database of truck companies, etc., all the major players, create a newsletter that will serve as a vehicle by which to communicate between them, not to them, but between them. We also want to hear what they have to say. We need to define our standard ops. That's going to be our one defensive tactic is to define what works and stand behind it. And then produce an easy-to-read guidebook on doing that. What's the best way to hold these critters down? Explore the biosecurity issue in the cease movement thing. And what merit has that got? Is that going to work? Contributing more expertise toward the state and federal bioterrorism contingency plans, which are, they're popping up everywhere. Research, we need more data on specific transport issues like windshield, bruising, carcass delamination, airflow, ventilation, fatigue, length of travel, rest stops. We need all that data and translate that data and give it to the truckers. Due diligence, we must remain committed to our due diligence policy related to transportation and DQA compliance. Like this goes back to the NCBA thing. Non-compliant players within our industry must realize that poor choices affecting the rest of us will not be supported or defended. So in conclusion, we must improve communication with every person involved in the relocation process. We must examine our own transport standard offs, including facilities and equipment. And we must take responsibility for the continued training of our cattle transporters, shippers, and receivers. And my final words are, cattle transporters across North America are an extremely important link in our chain. We all know that. And this sector is very complex, and we're learning that. These guys and gals are doing an absolutely terrific job out there. And that message needs to get out. None of us can imagine functioning in an industry without them. Thank you very much for your time. And now I will turn it over to my esteemed colleagues.